Denmark Hill by Alan Bennett.
An Edwardian house in South London. Spring, and the daffodils and such like are out, and upstairs where a window is open, a curtain shifts gently in the breeze. Downstairs, French windows give access to the lawn, and in the garden room, a schoolgirl of 15 or so sits doing her homework. She's a plain and old-fashioned child and is writing an essay. Gwen, her mother, a pretty middle-aged woman, comes through with some secateurs and even a trug.
Flowers for Daddy. Shh.
She does an elaborate performance of being quiet as, finger to her lips, she tiptoes into the garden. The schoolgirl, whose name is Harriet, ignores her.
My mother. Flowers are hardly top of my dad's list, but he's had pneumonia, with everybody thinking he was going to die, so it was getting quite interesting, except now he's on the mend. I have to write an essay for Miss MacArthur on Shakespeare's view of the family. It's a bugger.
Upstairs in the bedroom, Frank, Gwen's husband, lies in bed breathing with difficulty. George, a man of the same age but very much in the pink, stands at the window watching Gwen in the garden.
No, Frank.
Oh, be a sport.
Sorry, my son, more than my life's worth. Listen, old man, you're doped to the eyeballs. You'd go out like a light.
We'll cross that T when we come to it.
George comes furtively out of the bedroom. He listens, then goes next door to the toilet. He lifts the lid of the cistern and fishes out a bottle. As he emerges from the lab, Gwen is coming upstairs, so he hides the bottle behind his back.
Just paying a call.
Dear George, he's so much better. I think Dorset may be back on the cards.
Gwen, George and Harriet are waiting on the landing. George with a comforting hand on Gwen's shoulder.
Bear up, old girl. It's nobody's fault.
The bedroom door opens and Dr. Patmore comes out, grave-faced. He shakes his head slightly and Gwen bursts into tears. Harriet goes into the bedroom and stares fixedly at her dead father and takes a snap.
Miss MacArthur says that as a society we try to sweep death under the carpet, whereas in her view it's as much a part of life as birth is, and often less distressing. She says that if we get the chance of seeing a dead person, we're to jump at it.
Harriet! He's gone, precious. You can't bring him back.
As Gwen, George and Harriet come downstairs, the door into the hall opens and silhouetted in the doorway stands a boy of 19.
Charles! Charles! Oh, Charles! Oh, Charles!
It is Charles. Back at the bedside, Charles sits with his dead father.
Hello, Charles.
Do you die from pneumonia?
Charles looks at his sister and she snaps him, a two-shot with the corpse. Charles lays his head on the bed and finds his forehead is resting against something hard. He feels under the bedclothes and brings out an empty bottle.
What did you expect?
Charles and Harriet go through the house.
Here's one.
Here's another.
Mum never knew. She didn't.
Charles and Harriet take their finds to the shed, where they find more bottles and put them in the sack. As they're leaving, Harriet spots three or four gin bottles on the shelf, and she's about to put them in the sack too when Charles opens one and sniffs it.
No. Weed killer.
And he puts the bottles back on the shelf. Meanwhile, George and Gwen are on the same trail.
Coast clear.
Gwen reaches into a birdhouse and gets a bottle out, handing it to George. They go on up the garden to the shed.
The children must never know. He was happiest here.
She picks up a plastic garden spray and idly squirts some, smells it, then wordlessly hands it to George, who puts it with the rest.
Some good stuff here. No sense wasting it. Never know. Rainy day.
Yes, there are more gin bottles here on the shelf. Oh, bless.
She hands them to George, who just checks that they have liquid in them, without checking what that liquid is, and puts them with the other bottles in the shed cupboard, against the rainy day.
I did love him, George.
Of course you did, my dear.
Mm. Oh, poor whiskey.
It's evening, and in the sitting room, Gwen and George are looking at books strewn across the table. Harriet is doing her homework. Charles is stretched out on the sofa, ostentatiously taking no interest.
Tennyson?
Oh, yes, Tennyson. Tennyson, children.
Why?
Well, I love Tennyson.
It's not you, it's him.
In which case, why not the stock market report?
I never knew you loved Tennyson.
Oh, yes. I've always loved Tennyson. I wandered lonely as a cloud that floats on high or veils in hills, when all at once I saw a cloud. A host of golden daffodils.
That's Wordsworth.
Your father is dead.
That doesn't entitle you to play ducks and drakes with the Oxford Book of English Verse.
As a veteran of several of these occasions, take it from me, you can't go far wrong with Shakespeare.
Oh, yes. A sonnet, say.
The sonnets are homosexual.
Actually, some are and some aren't. Miss MacArthur thinks it would be wise to reserve judgment.
Perhaps you could ask Miss MacArthur for one of the respectable ones. Or George could ask Mr. Nightingale.
Birdie? Why should a bank manager know which of Shakespeare's sonnets are gay?
Oh, I don't know. They have computers.
We lack ceremony. There is no decent way nowadays of saying to the dead farewell. Know what I mean? It's all in the melting pot. My dear.
It's with you saying melting pot. Cremation's what he wanted, you're sure?
Cherish her, Charles. Goodbye, my dear. Keep your pecker up.
Good night, George.
Cherish her!
This Miss MacArthur, do you fancy her?
Up to a point. There's only a stage I'm going through.
We'll have to give people something to eat. Grief always makes people ravenous. And I can make a cup of some sort. I can dip into my quiche store.
Oh, I think if I have to eat another wedge of quiche, I will take a red-hot spoon and force it slowly up the nostrils of the woman who made it.
Well, I don't care much for cheese and onion.
I can do a nice spinach.
Dad hated spinach.
That doesn't matter, dear, surely.
If we have to have a poem he liked, why should we have a quiche he disliked?
That's a point. I should have asked George. Perhaps I'll call him later on.
Charles sits waiting in the drawing room, dressed in a grey suit and black tie, but with white trainers. George comes through, obviously masterminding the proceedings. He notices Charles' trainers.
Wouldn't wear those, honestly, old son. Black's more the norm.
Gwen is brushing her hair in front of the mirror. She takes off her negligee to reveal she's dressed in black slip, bra, and panties.
Is Black right?
Oh, I thought it was.
What I've never understood about funerals is why people hold on to these straps, as they invariably do. I mean, it isn't as if it's a bumpy ride, yet people cling on. For dear life, I suppose.
George should have come in this car.
No, he shouldn't. George isn't family.
In the porch of the church, two tellers, a man and a woman, take the names of those going in. A mourner enters.
Yes, Hopton, representing Frobisher, Rendell and Ross.
Mm-hmm.
As the woman takes down his name, some wreaths are carried in, one in the shape of a pound sign.
Rogers.
Gilliatt.
Representing anybody?
Just our good selves.
The family sit in the front pews, Gwen, Charles and Harriet, and George. Mr. Nightingale, Nicola his daughter and Gary his son, who is in army uniform, sit behind. The church is crowded, the coffin stands on the chancel steps, and a youngish clergyman addresses the congregation.
We are gathered here today to say farewell to our friend Frank Davenport. I didn't know Frank, but I gather God was not his strong point, so I've kept the form of service pretty loose in the hope there'll be something here to suit all tastes. Someone who did know Frank was his chaplain in the army, Canon Everest.
Dear hearts, and Frank, because he's here. Oh, not here in the coffin. Knock, knock. Who's there? Not Frank. Oh, no. But he's here in our hearts. And here. And here. In my heart, young man. In yours. Young lady, yours and yours and yours. Oh, yes. In all our hearts, Frank. I can't preach. I can't, not for Frank. Come off it, Padre, he'd say. We know the score. Had a good innings, time's up. Come in, number 17. So long, Frank. Let's thank God. Let's thank God for his plucky little wife. Let's thank God she's got someone like George to lean on. Let's thank God Frank had a fine son, Charles, who's going to be every bit the man his father was. And not forgetting Harriet, that little bundle of mischief. Dear man, you wouldn't like me blubbing, but forgive me, old son, if I brush away something that looks suspiciously like a tear, because... Well, damn and blast you, Frank, we shall miss you. You are a reprobate. Enough said. Sit down, Padre.
Now, before we go our separate ways and take up once more the burden of our particular lives, shall we sit for a moment and remember the life and work of Frank Davenport? And if anyone has a memory or thought of Frank they would like to share, please do.
Oh, that's right. Anybody wants to put their spoke in? Frank, as I knew him type thing, go ahead. Floor's open.
I remember him in those desperate days of Arnhem.
Can't hear.
Arnhem,
Where? Farnham?
Arnhem.
I still can't hear. Dead loss.
I was Frank's bank manager, Birdie, for my sins. No easy task, and knowing old Frank, I'm sure I'm not telling any tales when I say he was more often in the red than out of it. Still, no skin off our nose. That's how we banks make our money. We do have to make money. People often forget that. Though, in fact, the profits from private depositors are actually rather small. Most of our income comes in the form of investment.
Yes, yes, Bertie, quite so.
What I'd like to say is that I'm very sorry, and the bank is very sorry. Overdraft or no overdraft, it's a personal sympathy because I was a personal friend. But at a time like this, a bank manager can offer more than sympathy. He can offer all the backup facilities of a great institution.
Jolly good.
I thought that was very civilised.
Can I replenish you?
A splendid turnout. Let's pack to the girls. It always was a three-line whip where Frank was concerned.
Is there a sense in which your glass is empty?
It was so good of you both to come.
No, the more the merrier.
All hands to the pumps.
Charles is charming.
Jolly good. Swell the ranks. Oxford?
Cambridge.
Sad business. Sterling chap. Plucky lady, up till 2 a.m. buttering bridge rolls, deserves a medal. Still, correct me if I'm wrong, life has to go on.
Absolutely.
Onwards and upwards.
One day at a time.
Was he your first husband?
Yes.
Let it come, old girl. Better out than in.
I'll be all right.
That's their spirit.
No. Have I got this right? You're Rogers, he's Gilead.
No. I'm Rogers. Oh. He's Gilead.
The boy, your chum, Charles. World of his own right now. Can't reach him. Dad's dead, true, but dads do die. That's show business. No need to go overboard. He's going round with a face like the cat's bottom. Pretty poor when you consider that Mrs. Widow Lady is turning in such an award-winning performance. Do me a favour. See if you can't lodge a hand grenade up his rectum. Jolly him up a bit.
What George means is, take him under your wing a fraction.
He's young. I have this vision of us playing badminton together.
Message received and understood.
Over and out.
Are they Nancy's?
I don't know. They're very well mannered.
Rogers and Gilead thread their way across the room. Nicola, Nightingale's daughter, is helping with the food, moving round with a tray.
And, who are we?
I'm nobody.
Nobody? Don't talk like that. You're my sister.
She the one who's in and out of the bin.
Harriet takes a glass of punch and goes up to Gary.
Should you be having that?
No. You killed anybody yet, Gary?
No, we aren't there to kill people. We're there to stop people killing each other.
When you do kill somebody, will you drop me a postcard?
No.
Why? We're supposed to take an interest in current affairs. Miss MacArthur says it has all the features of a classic colonial war.
Nightingale, Gary's father, comes up behind him and Harriet and puts his arms round them both, his hand slightly too close to Harriet's bum, and saying for the benefit of Gwen and George...
the children, this is where the future lies.
Dear Birdie...
Rogers and Gilead now home in on Charles.
Cheer up. It may never happen.
You forget. It already has.
I lost my father.
I lost my mother.
You do get over it.
I never got over it.
Can't get it up.
Who with?
Anybody.
In particular?
No, just as a general principle. In the abstract. Under laboratory conditions. I can't get it up.
Did you get on well?
Who?
You and your dad.
On and off.
So it's guilt.
Oh, guilt. I invented it.
We've been given a brief to cheer you up. Fancy an evening out, the entertainment laid on?
Sex.
Art. Theatre group.
Ugh.
They come round and do plays in the home. Art in familiar surroundings.
We're going to see them doing Streetcar next week.
Tennessee Williams.
I hate the theatre.
Oh, so do they.
They're terrible.
You'll love it.
He's got a new joke. Tell him your joke.
It's about a man who discovers he has three balls.
Across the room, George and Gwen mingle with the guests without losing sight of Charles with Rogers and Gilliatt.
And he says to the man in the next stall, "You never think that between us we've got five balls." And the other man says, "Bye, you must have a cluster."
I don't understand it.
Gwen and George, seeing this, are gratified that Rogers and Gilliatt have succeeded in cheering Charles up. Their gratification turns to embarrassment as Charles does not stop laughing and the other guests begin to fall silent.
He's really sad is the dog. Charles didn't even like our dead dad. They were always at loggerheads. What does that mean?
What are you doing, dear?
Looking up loggerheads, as in the phrase, at loggerheads.
Oh, what an inquiring mind you have, dear.
Well, Miss MacArthur says that if we were more careful how we used words and gave things their right name, there would be no more misunderstandings.
Quite right. Charles?
What?
Here's whiskey waiting.
I don't want any.
Thus is Miss MacArthur's technique proved wrong.
And what does loggerhead mean, dear?
A long tool.
Really? Well, one lives and learns.
You can always hear me singing this song.
It's night. Charles is walking the dog. He sits on a seat and the dog sits beside him. A tramp lurches along the road and stops under a lamppost. He drinks from a bottle in a paper bag. Suddenly, the dog bounds away and over to the drunk, jumping up at him excitedly. Charles is puzzled and tries to make out the drunk more clearly.
You can always hear me.
Whiskey! Whiskey!
The drunk looks at Charles and lurches out of the lamplight.
Dad? Dad?
The dog comes disconsolately back. The tramp has disappeared. Lying on the pavement is a brown paper bag. Charles picks it up.
Dad's favourite.
The bottle is the same brand of whiskey he found in his father's bed. In their parents' bedroom, Charles and Harriet are going through their father's clothes.
Terrible ties. Were his ties terrible?
Charles is without his trousers, trying on an overlarge jacket in front of the mirror.
Whiskey knew him.
No, smelled the scotch, probably.
Somebody gave Dad that drink.
Uncle George. Why not? Anyway, you were never mad about Dad.
It's the principle of the thing.
I'm canvassing on behalf of the Conservative Party.
Pity. My husband was a lifelong Conservative, only now he's dead. But you can still count on me. I'm left. Charles, isn't that Daddy's suit jacket?
Yes.
Darling, I don't want to see Daddy's suit jackets paraded round the house. I've got a broken heart, remember? There must be half a dozen people in Africa who would be in seventh heaven with a jacket like that. It's Hall and Curtis. Do try and think of my feelings for a change.
Uncle George is wearing his overcoat. Hmm.
Uncle George is Daddy's build. Also, I think you should stop calling him Uncle George. Hmm. He's not your uncle, he's just a friend of the family. You must call him George, like a person.
Right. One, do not wear father's clothes. 2, do not call Uncle George Uncle George. Anything else?
Yes. I want you to stop calling me Mother or Mum. You're grown up now. Call me Gwen.
Gwen?
Yes. It's my name.
Why?
Because Daddy's dead. When Daddy was alive, we were Daddy and Mummy. Now Daddy's dead, I think we should go back to Gwen again.
I'm losing my bearings. You're not Mother. But what's this? Still a table? Home, is it, still? Do we go on calling it the family?
We don't want any of your university talk here, Charles.
Oh, sorry, Gwen.
The last time he wore that suit was in Ramsgate. You've no heart. It's dead men's shoes.
No, it isn't. We burned the shoes. They didn't fit.
At the bank, Mr. Nightingale, the bank manager, is having a conversation in his office with Gwen. Meanwhile, George is gazing out of the window.
So many people think of us as villains. We aren't the villain. There is no villain. We're just an ordinary business, but whereas an ordinary business sells confectionery, say, or ladies' lingerie, we sell money.
How much did he have?
A black deposit box of some weight sits on Nightingale's desk.
Now then. Dear me. Oh. Don't know how the bottles got here. Frank was a scamp. And officially, banks don't like scamps, but I'm a bit of a scamp myself. And as I said to Frank, we scamps must stick together. So thanks to Le Banque, Frank was a scamp with life insurance, with a paid-up mortgage and with a nice little portfolio of shares. Well, it's true, he had his liquidity problems.
Nobody knows that.
I think Bertie is talking about cash flow.
Oh.
But you're left, my dear, all in all, with a very nice going on.
Dear Frank.
How are the children taking it? Bearing up?
The boy's being a bit of a dismal Jimmy.
George.
No, Gwenny, love, here you are, donning your sensible shoes and striding purposefully into the sunset, whereas young fellow me lad is going round looking like a prolapse blancmange, a real pisspot.
George.
I just hope it's not.
What?
Well, mental.
No, he loved his father.
So did you, my precious.
I wondered...
What, my dear?
If Nicola happened to be at a loose end...
Yes?
If she and Charles could...
I think they'd call it a get-it-together.
Mind you, one wouldn't want to bring on her dyslexia again.
I think you mean anorexia, dear.
Do I?
Probably, but yes. After all, they're both young people.
And while you're about it, put out the odd feeler. Is he going round the twist or isn't he? After all, you know the signs. How is Nicola?
Fine. I think all that was just puberty.
Really? I didn't know it still existed. Let's go, Gwen.
Oh.
Make no mistake about it, Birdie. This is a wonderful woman.
Charles now signs papers at Nightingale's desk as Nightingale points out the places for his signature.
Yeah. And here. And here.
I thought of you this morning.
Me?
Did you? I was unblocking the sink. It was full of bits of grease and decaying vegetable matter, and somehow your name came up.
Nearly done.
Ever thought of opening a window?
It is hot.
Actually, it's quite cold. I meant on account of the stench.
It's probably the central heating.
No, it's money. The place stinks of money.
Well, it's a bank. All done.
You stink of money, Birdie.
Yes. I suppose I do.
George is doing a barbecue in the garden. Charles and Nicola are playing croquet. Harriet observes it all from a swing at the end of the garden.
Does that smell delicious, or does it smell delicious?
Charles and Nicola seem to be hitting it off nicely.
Oh, no, Charles!
Come along, chaps and chappesses, food. Here you are, Nicola. Get that bit of meat inside you.
Oh, isn't that rather big?
No, put lead in your pencil. Charles!
Ah, spot of much-needed sustenance, George.
Mustard, Charles?
That's very civil of you. Thank you, Gwen. Mustard, George.
Thank you.
Salt, Gwen.
No, thank you. Where's Harriet? Oh, on that swing. Harriet! Food!
George is here just about every day now. I don't know what he sees in her. Even with one to discount her fascinating mind, there's very little there. I tackled her on Milton the other day. She thought we were discussing disinfectant. They haven't actually committed sexual intercourse yet, but he'd better get his skates on. She's teetering on the edge of the menopause. Though, Miss MacArthur says, in some women, that's just a hiccup.
No, I don't think Harriet's shy. She's just very old-fashioned.
Oh, are we stacking? Thank you, Gwen. That was delicious.
Thank George.
Thank you, George.
Thank you. There, you see? You've eaten every scrap.
Whiskey the dog sits contentedly by Nicola, with his paw on her knee.
I'll just have a meander round. Stretch the old legs.
He goes off round the corner of the house to where Charles's car is standing. He looks round furtively and bends over one of the back tyres. That evening, Charles and Nicola sit side by side on the sofa. Gwen idly looks at the paper. George sits tranquilly by the fire.
Oh, I see the pounds had another nervous day. Oh, fire destroys Norway's biggest paint factory. Parties neck and neck in opinion polls race, yeah.
Well, shades of night. About time you were transporting your little lady homewards, Charles.
It's just what I was thinking, George.
Oh.
What, Gwen?
Nothing, dear.
What about you, George? Can I drop you?
Oh, much obliged, old chap, but I think, if the management approves, I'll bed down in the spare room.
Oh, yes.
Good night, George. Good night, Gwen.
You're so pretty. Pity. I was hoping something very young and beautiful was going to happen.
A few moments later, the young people return.
Changed your mind?
No transport. A puncture, George.
Really? Oh, Nicola will have to stay the night.
I can't.
Why?
I don't have a toothbrush.
I'm sure Mrs. Boss Lady can find you one. Anyway, I think I'll toddle on up. Night all.
Good night. I don't think George has got a towel.
She gets up and goes, leaving Charles and Nicola. They sit for a moment, then Nicola puts her hand on Charles's knee.
Oh, Charles.
Upstairs, George goes into one room, Gwen into another. They flash each other a quick, conspiratorial smile. In Charles's bedroom, Charles and Nicola are in bed. Charles gets off the inert Nicola. Intimacy has clearly not taken place.
Never mind. I'm glad.
Glad?
We can just be together. It's what I like best, really. I sometimes wish that was all there was, just being together and you didn't have to have the other.
I sometimes wish there was just the other and you didn't have to have the being together.
Well, you didn't really mean that.
Shut up. Listen.
Oh. Isn't that nice?
Nice. Nice. My father is dead.
They're only people.
They're going on and on and on. No. They've stopped. Doubtless they're doing your favourite now. Being together. Jesus, they're at it again.
It's
It's normal!
Normal? Christ! It's my mother!
More sex, and Charles is listening intently. But this time, it's not sex between George and Gwen. It's the Acme Players, performing a scene from A Streetcar Named Desire in and around the house of Stanley and Lillian. Watched by a dozen or so people that include Charles, Rogers and Gilliatt.
You want some rough house? All right, let's have some rough house.
The actors playing Blanche and Stella are in drag.
Stella?
Yes, Blanche?
If anyone calls while I'm bathing, take the number and tell them I'll call right back.
Yes.
That cool yellow silk, the boucle. See if it's crushed. If it's not too crushed, I'll wear it, and on the lapel, that silver and turquoise pin in the shape of a seahorse.
She's stubbing her cigarette out on the table. It was my mother's.
It's the arts, Lillian. Shut up.
You will find them in the heart-shaped box I keep my accessories in.
Some of us managed to combine a love of the theatre with a respect for other people's property. The blighters.
It's alternative theatre.
And Stella, try and locate a bunch of artificial violets in that box, too, to pin with the seahorse on the lapel of the jacket.
I don't know if I did the right thing.
Yes, and we're going to have to get an alternative carpet.
Another satisfied customer.
The play is over, and the cast are getting changed.
I'm very fond of that table. Very fond of it.
Just bear with it, it's good.
No.
Stanley and Lillian are still arguing, while Charles talks to the actor who played Blanche, who is the leader of the group.
Does it run to a garden? We like to do the battlement stuff al fresco.
Oh, yes, big garden.
What kind of access?
French windows.
Oh, French windows, heaven. I've always wanted to be in a play with French windows.
What play?
Hamlet, at this gentleman's house, next Wednesday.
You must be mad. They've ruined a lovely candlewick bedspread.
This is art, Lillian. I never liked that bedspread anyway.
You do the play scene.
Look, Nia, it's not a great moment from Shakespeare. Of course we do the play scene.
You'll never do it here again.
And the scene in the play within the play when the wicked uncle pours the poison into the king's ear?
Dans l'oreille.
I want you to change it.
Tamper with the text? Why?
Don't put the poison in his ear. Give him it in a glass, like a drink.
Cost you another £5.
At home, a few days later, Harriet is arranging the sitting room as for a play, with the stage by the fireplace.
So, in the play, Hamlet asks the players to adapt the play within the play to fit the circumstances of his father's murder. All right, so far. Now, Charles is asking these players to adapt the play within the play to fit the circumstances of Dad's death, which, if this were a play, would make this Hamlet. Only the play the players are putting on is Hamlet. Oh, I think a cigarette is called for. Because where do I fit in? I must ask Miss MacArthur if anybody's ever suggested Hamlet had a sister.
Who's there?
Nay, answer me. Stand and unfold yourself.
Long live the king.
Bernardo?
He.
You come most carefully upon your hour.
They're late.
They're young.
They're coming from Croydon.
Are they students?
Are they students?
Gwen imagines everyone under the age of 25 is a student.
Pretty safe bet, if you ask me.
They're actors, George.
What time do they call this? Time for another, Mrs. Davenport?
Mm-hmm. I feel responsible, Mrs. Davenport.
Gwen. Gwen. George. George. Gwen.
I'm eating these chocolates.
Why not telephone?
I hope they haven't had an accident.
Hope followed a muck cart and thought it was a wedding.
There's somebody in the garden.
The door of the sitting room is thrown open, and the players rush in.
Oh, that this too solid flesh would melt, thaw, and resolve itself into a dew.
The stage Hamlet perches on a chair next to Charles, in a parody of Charles's earlier gloom.
Or that the everlasting had not fixed his canon gate self-slaughter. Oh, God! God! How weary, stale, flat and unprofitable seem to me all the uses of this world.
I often wonder if I should have been an actor. I did have the chance, only I thought banking offered more.
Fiant! Ah, fie! 'Tis an unweeded garden that grows to seed. Things rank and gross in nature possess it merely.
I am enjoying this.
That it should come to this. But 2 months dead. Nay, not so much. Not two. So excellent a king that was to this Hyperion to a satyr.
Oh, it's so real.
First rate.
Full 30 times hath Phoebus' cart gone round Neptune's salt wash and Tellus's orbit ground, and 30 dozen moons with borrowed sheen about the world have times 12:30s been, since love our hearts and hymen did our hands unite commutual in most sacred bands.
The play within the play takes place upstairs in the bedroom where Charles's father died.
So many journeys may the sun and moon make us again count o'er, ere love be done. But woe is me, you are so sick of late, so far from cheer and from your former state.
We see the king in the play asking the villain for a drink. The villain at first refuses, then gives him one. The king collapses. The villain comforts his widow and kisses her. During this, Charles is intently watching George's reactions.
Lights! Lights! Lights!
Yes, come on, somebody, switch it on. Let the dog see the rabbit.
Well?
Well, what?
Don't you see? Don't you see?
See what, dear?
He killed him, then took his wife.
Of course he did. Give his credit for a little intelligence, and now he's wrestling with his conscience, right? We're not stupid.
Your son is pathetic.
In the sitting room, the king is slumped in an armchair, staring at a blank television screen, wrestling with his conscience. Hamlet appears behind him and picks up an ornament as if about to smash it over the king's head.
Go on, go on. Give him what for.
Now might I do it, Pat. Now he's praying. And now I'll do it. And so he goes to heaven. And so am I revenged. That would be scanned. A villain kills my father. And for that I, his sole son, do this same villain send to heaven. Oh, this is hire and salary, not revenge.
He's such a wet, this boy.
The players, followed by the audience, move upstairs to Gwen's bedroom, where the scene between Hamlet and Gertrude takes place. Around the door, George and the others crane to see what's happening in the bedroom.
Nay, but to live in the rank sweat of an unseamed bed, stewed in corruption, honeying and making love over the nasty sty.
That's it. Now you're talking. You tell her the bitch. The dirty cow.
Oh, speak to me no more. These words like daggers enter in my ears. No more, sweet Hamlet.
A murderer and a villain. A slave that is not 20th part the tithe of your precedent lord. A vice of kings. A cut purse of the empire and the rule that from a shelf the precious diadem stolen put it in his pocket.
Detached as ever, Harriet sits in the kitchen, smoking and with a drink.
Congratulations. Hmm? They're loving it.
Why? Why?
Why what?
Why can't they see themselves?
It's a play.
It was a play in Shakespeare. They saw themselves there. The king saw the play and recognised himself and was conscience-stricken.
But that was a play too. The whole thing was a play. This isn't a play.
Look at Queen Elizabeth.
She was always seeing plays and kicking up because she thought they had a message for her.
That's allegory. I haven't done that yet. Miss MacArthur's...
Oh, sod Miss MacArthur. Oh, Christ.
The king falls dead at George's feet. The queen, also dying, holds up a glass.
No, no, the drink, the drink. Oh, my dear Hamlet, the drink, the drink. I am poisoned. Oh.
Hamlet is dying. George is very moved.
Poor sod.
Fought in brass.
I'm canvassing on behalf of the Labour Party, but I don't know who this gentleman is.
Fought in brass, you twerp.
For me, with sorrow I embrace my fortune. I have some rights of memory in this kingdom, which now to claim my vantage doth invite me.
Thank you. Oh, thank you.
Come again. Goodbye.
Come along, Nicola. Try me with going.
Goodbye, George. Goodbye, Gwen. Oh.
Good night, Gwen. Good night, George.
Good night, Gwen.
Good night.
Good night, George.
Good night.
George, with his arm round Gwen, leads her back into the house, which is pretty much a shambles. George rights a chair or two.
Leave it. Come on up, darling.
Won't be long.
Charles is waiting for Gwen in her bedroom.
Allow your mother just a little share of happiness. You're young. It was no joke being married to your father.
Frank, you mean?
Your father. And so long since your mother was appreciated. A little kiss, even.
It's not just a little kiss, though, is it? It's full-blown sexual intercourse.
Please, you make it sound so clinical.
You don't.
We're people, Charles. Human beings.
Human beings? You're 50. Look at you.
Well, I'm a fine figure of a woman. I look younger every day.
It's in such bad taste. I am trying to find some guilt here.
Guilt? I'm all woman, Charles. George!
Your husband has just died.
Don't exaggerate. It's 2 months ago at least. I know, I wrote it.
Oh, Mother!
That word again. What?
George killed Father.
Did he? I thought it was pneumonia.
No! It was like in the play. George gave him a drink and it killed him.
Isn't that George all over? He gave me this new nightdress. He just can't say no. You see, dear, Frank drank. That's what killed him. It isn't like the play. Life isn't like plays. I mean, if it was like the play, there'd be that old man behind the curtains calling out at this point and you'd have to kill him. You aren't going to kill anybody. People don't do such things.
There was Birdie. Their car's broken down. Be a sweetie, Charles, and nip over and give them a lift home. I'm knackered.
Indifferent to Charles, George unzips Gwen's dress and kisses the back of her neck.
God.
Charles watches, horrified.
Away you go, Charles. And take care.
Birdie and Nicola were sitting in the car, parked on the road, waiting for Charles. He drove smack into them. Birdie was killed. Nicola's in a coma. Both cars were a write-off. Everybody's heartbroken. And the funeral's this afternoon.
Harriet sits at her table in the sitting room, doing her homework. Charles is on the sofa in his funeral suit, one leg in plaster.
Is the fate of Shakespeare's tragic heroes inevitable?
Shakespeare doesn't work. Life isn't like Shakespeare. Right now it's Ibsen. I feel like shooting myself. Hamlet meets Hedda Gabler. What are they doing?
Not that. They're in the kitchen.
I woke up at 4 this morning. They were at it like knives. If this were Shakespeare, they'd be racked with guilt. Do you think I ought to paint my cast black?
What for?
The funeral.
In the kitchen, Gwen is peering into the fridge freezer.
Hello again, quiches.
While Gwen gloats over her store, George's hand caresses her bum.
My little gooseberry tart.
He embraces her as she holds out a frozen quiche behind him, and while he kisses her neck, reads the label.
Leek and raspberry. That can't be right. How's the cup going?
Bit short on gin. This our total stock.
Oh, I knew there was something I'd forgotten. But there's that stuff in the shed still. Frank's residue in the cupboard.
Good old Frank. I'll go and fetch it.
George carries a punch bowl into the sitting room and places it down, with the glasses arranged neatly round it. It is orange and evil-looking. In the garden, Charles and Harriet, in their funeral clothes, are playing French cricket. Gwen watches them through her bedroom window. George comes up and puts his arms round her.
Time for a quick one, eh?
Oh, George, we're going to a funeral.
I think that's what does it. I'll nip down and get a drink first.
One for me too.
Gary. Come in, old son, come in.
Oh, George. I'm a soldier, I'm used to death. My father gone, Nicola in a coma. I can't believe it.
Nothing to say, nothing to say. Have a drink.
George and Gary go on into the sitting room. George ladles himself a glass of punch from the bowl, with one for Gwen and one for Gary. Gary stares out of the window at Charles and Harriet playing French cricket.
I know. Don't say it. And that's more grief might not come amiss. Remorse. That's the name of the game.
I loved my father.
What time do we kick off?
Two.
I better get the old skates on. Help yourself.
Gary gulps down the punch as he continues to stare moodily out of the window at Charles and Harriet.
I loved him.
You're useless. I thought you said you were good at this.
I'm a girl, right?
Well, that's no excuse.
I don't think you should be playing games, children. Someone's dead.
Thank you, Gwen.
George comes up behind her, puts the drink in front of her, and she drinks some, and they embrace. Gwen drinks some more and is undoing her bra when a shadow crosses George's face.
What's the matter?
Charles stumps with his pot leg through the French windows. The sitting room is seemingly empty. He takes a drink from the punch bowl, and as he finishes it, he hears a glass fall to the floor and sees a khaki-clad arm lolling over the sofa. He looks behind it, and Gary is lying there, face distorted and unable to speak.
Help! Mum! Mum!
George is slumped by the door of the bedroom, breathing his last. Charles savagely shakes him.
What is it? What is it?
Gwen is crawling along the corridor with not long to live either.
The drink. Charles. It's the drink.
At which point, the drink gets to Charles and he staggers himself.
Oh, God! Gwen!
Charles!
God!
In the garden, Harriet is contemplating the sunlit house. She sighs, then gets up and goes towards the French windows. In the sitting room, Gary is lying dead. Harriet looks at him, more puzzled than shocked, and she goes out into the hall.
I'm calling on behalf of the Green Party. We want to change the face of politics.
Oh, yes. Come in. I'm just doing allegory with Miss MacArthur.
She moves aside, and on the stairs is a tableau of Charles sprawled dead at the bottom, Gwen above him, and George above her.
Is this a bad moment?
At the crematorium, Harriet stands back from the coffins as they are borne away.
The weight of this sad time we must obey. Speak what we feel, not what we ought to say. The oldest hath borne most. We that are young shall never see so much, nor live so long.
Beside her stands a tall, dignified woman. It is plainly Miss MacArthur. Miss MacArthur pats Harriet comfortingly on the shoulder. Harriet smiles at her, bravely.
In Denmark Hill by Alan Bennett, the narrator was Alan Bennett. Harriet was played by Bryony Hannah. Gwen was Penny Downey. George was Robert Glenister. And Charles was Samuel Barnett. Canon Everest was played by Geoffrey Palmer. Nightingale, Malcolm Sinclair. Stanley, Stephen Critchlow. And Nicola was played by Kathy Sarah. Other parts were played by members of the company. Denmark Hill was adapted by Honor Borick from the original screenplay by Alan Bennett. It is directed by Tristram Powell and is a Catherine Bailey production for BBC Radio 4.